Today's podcast session is supported by Upheal. So if you ask a therapist who's doing clinical work what the bane of their existence is, usually progress notes are in the top 1 to 2. I'm not naming any names, but when I was doing clinical work, I remember I had several colleagues who would get so backed up on clinical notes, so they would end up spending their nights and weekends trying just to catch up. Honestly, who wants to do that? And this is where Upheal comes in. Upheal is AI-powered case notes. Now, I know for many of us, when we hear the word AI, there's like a natural skepticism. And honestly, I had that skepticism as well until I got to meet with the Upheal team and learn about some of the many ways that they are doing this in a way that is HIPAA compliant and also doesn't sell data to anyone and also protects our clients as well. You can learn more about Upheal and the awesome work that they're doing in the world by going to sellingthecouch.com/Upheal. And Upheal is spelled U-P and then H-E-A-L, all one word. And at checkout, be sure to enter the promo code COUCH25, C-O-U-C-H, and the number 25 to get 25% off your Upheal plan for the first 2 months. Welcome to Selling the Couch. I'm your host, Dr. Melvin Verghese. My guest today is Lynn Grotzky. Lynn is a licensed clinical social worker with over 20 years of experience providing counseling services to adults and couples. Lynn's also a master certified coach and recognized as one of the leading business coaches for small business owners. Her articles on private practice building have appeared in Psychotherapy Networker and Social Work Today, and she's spoken at numerous conferences all around the country.
At the Psychotherapy Networker Symposium in Washington, D.C., in front of a very enthusiastic audience. And I'm very honored to be here with Lynn Grotzky.
Hi, everybody.
Her book, Building Your Ideal Private Practice, which was first published in 2000, became a bestseller. The book was recently revised to account for some of the major changes in the world of private practice.
There are some new opportunities that we can see if you look at the perspective of our profession. There's a really big opportunity.
In today's session of Selling the Couch, Lynn shares some of her best advice to help you build your ideal private practice. These include some of the key steps that clinicians often overlook when starting a private practice, her best advice for someone who is trying to make the transition from part-time private practice to full-time, especially when they currently have a full-time job, as well as some of the best tools to start your private practice in this day and age. Here is my conversation with Lynn Grotzky from PrivatePracticeSuccess.com. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. Thank you.
Lynn, you begin your book with a quote from Jackie Nagle that says, "I have learned that if you build a successful person, they in turn will build a successful business." How do you think that quote applies to the world of private practice?
I think it applies to private practice especially. And what I mean by that is when you're looking at small business, it requires that the business owner, people like you and me, have a full set of skills and personal attributes to help them build a business. So as a therapist and a coach, what I always say is it's not just about what you need to do, it's about who you need to be in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. And we can talk more specifically about that during our time.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think are some of those ingredients that make for a successful private practitioner?
Well, one thing I think is that you have to be comfortable with business skills. And these days, business skills include things like negotiation. So that as soon as you get that first phone call from a potential client, you're actually involved in a negotiation right there and then. And you're trying to get to yes so that you can convert that client into a paying client. The person on the phone or the person on the email will come in to see you. And a lot of therapists don't realize that they're in a negotiation right from the start. So it helps to have some skills to know how to get to yes.
Well, I feel like even orienting yourself from that perspective of I'm in a negotiation, I feel like at the onset, I feel like that it's a different trajectory. And I think it's a different way of looking at the business side of private practice.
It really is, especially with clients that are coming from the internet. And I call these educated consumers, that these are people who are shopping for therapists. And just like any other kind of shopping experience, they're ready to negotiate right from the start. And this takes a lot of therapists by surprise and makes them feel confused and even intimidated.
How do you think someone that, you know, in this day and age, that is someone that is more internet savvy, how does that differ from the way that private practice used to be where, you know, someone would just call and then ask about services?
Well, in the past, people needed to get a referral to see a therapist. So they needed to find somebody who knew someone that they could refer to. And it was great for therapists because what it meant is that by the time somebody called you or came in to see you, they were halfway sold on the idea of therapy and even on you as a therapist. So your work was so much easier at the start. These days, it's a lot harder because people have the internet. They have long lists of therapists that they can choose from, and they're really more in the driver's seat where they're looking for somebody who has the right time frame for them, is accessible to them, charges what they want to pay. They think that they can pick and choose because they don't understand that not all therapists are the same. And that one's kind of on us as therapists, that we haven't really understood that we need to differentiate and make our offerings very unique and targeted to people, so that we don't promote the idea that one therapist is exactly like another.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's such a different day and age. So I guess knowing that a lot of potential clients are coming in with all of this knowledge and a different level of investment into the therapy process, how should that inform someone as a business person?
Well, I have an entire strategy that I like therapists to use in terms of retaining clients. And that includes things like how to negotiate, how to make sure that you're making the value of therapy extremely clear and defined for a client so that they don't feel like, well, what really happened here today or what am I paying for? And that you give them a way to think about therapy over time. You know, most clients have never been in therapy before that are coming from the internet, and they don't understand what this is. It's not, therapy is not usually like anything else that a person does. So again, I feel like as therapists, we have to give clients a frame of reference that they can understand. I've detailed this. I've been talking about this. I've been writing about this. And I just feel like it's a new skill set for therapists today to have in order to deal well with clients that come from the internet.
Speaking of which, what do you think is a key step or even a couple of key steps that clinicians often overlook when they first start getting into private practice?
One of the steps is something that is really basic for most people going into business, but somehow we've never really defined a psychotherapy private practice as a business. We kind of think of it more as a hobby. And that step is making sure that you have finances for your practice, that you're not going to starve your new young practice. So I really like therapists getting into private practice to have a budget, to have an idea of what it's going to cost during the first year, and to make sure that they have enough money saved or that they've even gone to a bank and gotten a bank loan so that they can do the things that are important for that practice. And that includes the marketing and making sure they have the right space and making sure they have the right materials that project the image that they want. In other words, I don't want therapists to do this on the cheap because it just makes them anxious.
Right. You want them to be as prepared as possible going into it as opposed to getting right in the middle of it and wondering like what is going on.
Yes. And to feel like they have a financial cushion so that if they're transitioning from another job, you know, maybe they've left a job and they're going into private practice, the worst possible scenario is for that therapist to feel really anxious because there is almost no way to hide that in talking to potential referral sources when you're doing your marketing or even to new clients.
What are the major financial aspects that someone that's wanting to get right into private practice, what should they be thinking about before they actually jump in?
You know, a lot of the things are things that therapists know about, that they want to have liability insurance and that they want to have a system for their administrative tasks and that they want to have good office space that they like being in and feel comfortable with and that they want to have a professional presentation, whether it's a website or brochures or business cards or social media sites that they feel represent who they are. And that all takes time and also it takes some money.
I guess what I hear you saying is that it really is going to, there's some things that are very common, but some of it may kind of vary, right? In terms of, for example, like building a website, you know, that could vary in terms of cost, but whatever it is, I think what you're saying is do enough research at the onset, as opposed to trying to figure that out after you've jumped in.
Yes. So that you have a plan in place. And I'm really big on having a plan. It's so helpful.
Yeah, plans are always good.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that you were alluding to is that there is, I feel like, so much anxiety now in our field, especially just thinking about being in private practice in this day and age with all of the things that are happening with insurance. And what would you say to someone who's thinking about jumping in and feels that level of anxiety or uncertainty?
I feel like there are a lot of real reasons why therapists that are coming into practice right now might be anxious. This is really a different scenario than it was even 10 years ago. You need to be prepared and be savvy. I want you to have ideas about marketing over time and realistic ideas so that you're not expecting that you're going to create new clients on your first week out at marketing. You know, one thing that therapists get really discouraged about is they'll say to me, well, I tried this or I tried that and it didn't work, without realizing how much repetition is needed in marketing or in going out and networking. Industry standards say it takes something like 6 times for somebody to read an ad before they'll make a call, and that it might take even 6 visits with someone that you're networking with before they think about you as someone they want to refer to. So you need to have a strategy of, well, how will I stay front of the mind without being obnoxious or feeling like I'm pushing myself onto someone? And the good news is there are all kinds of really great ways to do this with integrity, ways that are relational, because we always want to stay highly relational with everybody that we're dealing with, and ways to just be building a reputation for yourself and for your practice. So there's lots of opportunity out there. And I guess the best news is our market is growing. Mm-hmm. The amount of people in the United States who are coming to therapy is growing now a lot because of things like Obamacare and because of the media, which is starting to embrace the idea of counseling and therapy. So there's a need that's growing out there for your services. It's just a question of how you start to meet that need.
Lynn, I really like how you're talking about doing marketing in a way that is full of integrity. What are some of the things that you have found that are good places to start with marketing?
What I like to suggest, I talk about this in my new book, is that you create a bullseye, a drawing of a bullseye with concentric circles. And you start with an inner circle, which would be people that know you and like you and might already be referring to you or would absolutely refer to you if they knew someone that would be right. And then the next circle would be people that know you and like you but aren't referring to you yet. And then the outer circle would be people you'd like to know. And you could think about marketing as a process of moving people from the outer circles to the inner circles. So what we're really looking at is a process of building relationships that over time become referral relationships. Right now, we know that most clients are coming 50-50 from the internet and from networking. That's how clients are getting to therapists. So while the internet is very important, you can't ignore the need to build a community of people that know you and understand what you do all around your business.
Right. Even with the internet part of it, at the end of the day, it is all about relationships. And I feel like the practitioners or the companies that come across as human and genuine, I think even on the internet, those are the ones that tend to stand out.
Yes. So we know on the internet that you only have a few seconds of time before somebody moves off of your website. So a lot is important in terms of how you word things and what the visuals look like and your keywords. All of that's really important and to be optimized. But also, can you kind of reach out from your web page with a message? And can you also be clear about a call to action? What is it you want the reader to do next? Can you help them take that next step?
Right. So even just getting a little bit more, hopefully not too technical, but just that call to action on the website. So I guess what would that practically mean? Would that mean like a call or schedule an appointment? Or what would be some examples of call to actions on a private practice website?
Well, you could decide on any given page, what do I want the reader to do? Do I want them to call me? Do I want them to turn the page? Do I want them to go to an article? So once you decide what you want the reader to do, then the call to action is an invitation to the reader to do that. And it often needs to be a strong invitation. So if what you want the reader to do is call you, rather than just put your phone number in the corner of the web page and think to yourself, well, the reader will connect the dots. If they like what I have to offer, they'll just call. It doesn't work that way on the internet. Instead, you have to have something in a box that's clear for the reader to see that says, it's easy to get started. Here's your first step. Here's my phone number. Call this number. Here's what will happen. We'll arrange for a session together. At our first session, here's what it will be like. So you have to actually walk the person through, because you have to remember, this is scary for most people. And as I say, no one's happy about having to find a therapist. This is not what people
right.
jump up and down. Oh, yay. You know, they're in need, but they're not happy about it. So you have to remember the level of anxiety in the reader or in the potential client and help them move forward.
Right. Which I think is why it is important to be very clear. And I like that way that you're distinguishing it, because regardless of whatever page of your website, ideally it should be one call to action, right? Especially, and I think especially true for someone that's going to be looking for a private practitioner that is already worried or anxious. I think the more clear you are about what that one call to action is, I think the better it is.
Yes, and then to repeat it on the inside pages, because what we're learning now is that people don't remember what they read on one page to another.
That's of your amazing. Website.
Yeah, so repetition is a great thing on the web. It's really helpful.
What do you think, just shifting a little bit, what advice would you give to someone who's trying to make that transition from being in part-time private practice to going full-time, even if they're, you know, although they still might be working a full-time job?
Mm-hmm. I've helped a lot of people do this. And it seems to me that although each situation is different, the process is almost always the same. And that process is that we're going to create a plan together. What makes it different is that some people have a different degree of risk tolerance than others. So some people say, hey, I believe it's all going to work out. So on this date, I'm going to quit my job and jump into private practice. And it doesn't really matter how many clients I have, versus somebody who might be more risk avoidant, who says, I'm not comfortable leaving my current job until I have this much income in place, or until I have these many clients in place, or these many contracts or opportunities in place. So the first thing is to kind of decide for yourself what your plan is going to be. And then we need you to work that plan. It usually takes a year. And if you are somebody who needs to have a certain amount of income going, during this year, you're going to work extra hard. You're going to be working your full-time job, and you're going to be really working the part-time job to get it to a level where you feel like it's comfortable to make the leap and where this part-time job can support you. So that means we're going to be increasing advertising. If you advertise, we're going to be increasing networking. We're going to be increasing other kinds of marketing, and then we're going to be increasing the kind of work that you're doing with your clients so that you build a solid clientele. So what I ask people to do is to look at the other things in their lives, like nonprofit work or volunteer or other things that they might be involved with that they can let go of, because it's going to be a really intense year to make that transition. But then once you've made the transition, you'll be really glad about this and, you know, it'll be worth it.
Well, I mean, I like the mindset that you're talking about, right? Like seeing the process of making that transition as a long-term thing, but also just anticipating that it is going to take some time. It's not going to be like that forever, but just sort of getting those systems in place and realizing that it's something that will happen, but just may not happen tomorrow or next week.
Right. And so that you get dedicated to the process. You know, it's kind of like when somebody says to me, how do you write a book when you're working full time? You know, you have to be dedicated to the process because it's going to be like another part-time or sometimes even full-time job that you're carrying. So what I'm looking for when somebody's ready to transition is a level of commitment so that everybody is on board, including if you're part of a family, that the family members understand, mom or dad or husband or wife, this is going to be an intense year and we have to support you in that.
Lynn, the final area that I wanted to talk to you about was just this idea of doing private pay, private practice, and even this idea of, is that something that's even possible in this day and age, especially with everything that's going on, increased competition and Obamacare and all of those things?
I really think that it's more of a challenge than it ever was before. And I know that there's certain places in the United States, certain cities where it may not be possible to have a full fee non-insurance practice. But in those cases, what I'd like to suggest is that people at least have a blended practice where they do some insurance and some full fee. And I have a complete transitioning process for this that's in the new book. But some of the key points of this are that as long as you're taking all the insurance plans, there is no reason for anybody to go outside their insurance plan for you. Even though I know that therapists like to make a pitch to potential clients to say, look, it's better to be outside insurance because it protects confidentiality and for many other reasons. In our country, most people feel like if they have the insurance and you take the insurance, they want to use their insurance.
Right. It's almost like you're priming them to be able to use insurance if you accept it.
Yeah. And why wouldn't they? I mean, we all want that. Right. So if you want full fee clients, you have to have a couple things in place. You have to slowly take yourself off some of the insurance plans. And, you know, we usually look at which ones are not as profitable. And those are the ones you let go of. And then we work to build your reputation, because people will forego insurance in seeing you if they really want you. If there's something really specific about what you have to offer that's very high value that they don't find anyplace else, then they'll make that decision to spend for you. So again, we're back at that thing that we talked about in the very beginning, which is how do you differentiate yourself so that you make sure that people understand that not all therapists are the same and you're really clear about what's unique and highly valuable about you.
Lynn, you said something earlier, which is building a private pay practice may not be possible in every part of the country. So how would someone at a very practical level go about figuring out whether they can do that, like in wherever they live?
Well, sometimes when I talk with therapists, they kind of already know because they're talking with other therapists in the area and they're hearing people say, you know, I've tried to not use insurance and it's not possible not to be on Blue Cross Blue Shield, or it's not possible not to be on United Behavioral Healthcare. So that therapists are really a good source of information. But I'd also look for who are those few therapists who might be outside insurance and how are they doing it? And can you start to develop a model based on what you're seeing them do? you know, just for your listeners to know, even in areas where most therapists are taking insurance, it is possible to have a practice that's a full fee practice or a blended practice, again, dependent on what you have to offer. So I'm always wanting to look at, you know, what are the services that are most in demand, that are selling really well, and let's get you really well seated or in a niche of some of those services so that people are going to come to see you and, you know, they might be at a choice point then to say, can I afford what you have to offer because it's not covered by insurance? You know, and then we're into another conversation, which is how do we make your services affordable and attractive even outside of insurance?
All really great points. Lynn, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Oh, this was really fun. You know, I know there's so much that we can be talking about, but I hope that it was helpful.
Yeah, I really enjoyed our conversation. Lynn, what are the best ways that my audience can get in touch with you if they do want to touch base with you?
Well, the first point of contact is usually my website, which is www.privatepracticesuccess.com. And on privatepracticesuccess.com, there are ways for people to take a strong start survey, which is a really helpful survey to think about your goals and what's next for you in practice. That's for free. And if you want to bounce from that survey to working with me, there's a way to do that. There's all kinds of free articles on the website. There's checklists of interesting things. There's a resource list of all the electronic billing and note-taking and websites and all the tips and ideas that therapists pass along to me. I have free lists for that. You can read first chapters of the books. So there's a lot on the website, and that's the best way to reach me by email or to see a lot of the offerings that I have, including the new book.
Awesome. So I'll definitely link to that here in the show notes. Lynn, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lynn Grodzki. There were so many golden nuggets in that one. And one of the things that I really liked was that exercise that Lynn mentioned where she talks about finding who you know and who you'd like to know. I feel like something like that is such a great blueprint prior to taking action. You can find lots of resources for your private practice journey, including the Strong Start survey that Lynn mentioned, on Lynn's website at privatepracticesuccess.com. I'll also link to Lynn's website as well as all of Lynn's books on the show notes, which you can find at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 19. Have a splendid week, everyone. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.